Wolves Cast, audio on demand.
Welcome into Wolves Cast Audio on Demand. John Folkey, Cal Soderquist here on the Timberwolves Radio Network. Coming up on this episode, we'll check in with Jimmy Butler. A fun conversation as Butler's come up big here for Minnesota in the last couple of games. We'll also go three in the key. Kobe Bryant getting a couple of numbers up in the rafters there at Staples Center. The Houston Rockets rolling. Chris Paul still undefeated since leaving the LA Clippers. And we'll take a look ahead at the Christmas Day games. Before we get to all of that, Minnesota coming off a big one-point win over the Portland Trailblazers on Monday, 108-107. Wild game in which Minnesota was down by as many as 10 in the fourth quarter, but found a way to come back to win. Let's listen as Alan Horton takes us through those final couple of minutes.
McCollum up top with Towns on him. McCollum, one dribble, pull up 18-footer off the rim. No, Ed Davis all alone for the putback. 93-85. Back out to Crawford. Jamal jacks up a 35-footer and hits it with a shot clock dwindling down. Let's see if that sparks the Wolves. 97-90. 16 for Jamal Crawford. You got to ride the hot hand. 9 in the quarter for Crawford. Lillard in the lane, throws it away. 4 in a row. Crawford then loses it in midcourt and gets it back. Up to Butler. Two-handed slam dunk. 8-0 Timberwolves run. This is a two-point game. Teague off balance in the lane. Nearly throws it away, but Crawford has it. Pulls up with a 15-footer, and he got fouled from behind. C.J. McCollum commits it. It's a three-point opportunity for the NBA's fourth leading free throw shooter. A chance to get to within one. 15 in the quarter for Jamal Crawford. He's been sensational. Right side McCollum, watched by Butler. Well beyond the arc. Here's Lillard to the right side off a Nurkic screen. Lillard bottled up, up top CJ, puts it on the deck. Pulls up at the top of the key and strokes it with 43 seconds left. 107-106, Blazers lead by one. Jimmy's second free throw for the lead. He got it. It was nothing but net on both of them. 108-107. Minnesota leads by one. 2.5 seconds left. Turner will trigger in for Portland. They're down by one with 2.5 left. Turner holding. Comes into Lillard. Lillard, one dribble. Launches a left angle three. It's offline. Timberwolves win. They rally from 10 down in the final 7 minutes and 30 seconds. And they stun the Blazers. Wolves win! 108-107!
All right, Cal, that was the first time that the Wolves have overcome a deficit of 10 or more points in the final 8 minutes of a game since February 22nd, 2012, against the Utah Jazz. You might remember this. Right before All-Star break, Luke Ridenour and the Wolves able to rally from down 15 to win it 100-98. It sounded like this.
7 seconds left to go. Tie game at 98. Barea up top. He's doubled. Looks back to his right. Luke's got it. Take a peek at the clock. He'll run it up there. Inside the free throw line and drains it at the buzzer. Luke Ridenour wins it for the Wolves. 198 is the final. Oh, what a shot by Luke.
All right, so the win on Monday over the Portland Trailblazers, maybe not as dramatic as the Ridenour walk-off there, but dramatic in its own way because of what was on the line in terms of playoff positioning and the division lead and so on. And you know, Minnesota coming off that tough loss to Phoenix and wanting to close out this homestand with a winning record. So taking a look back at Monday night, there were a lot of great storylines going into it, a lot of great storylines coming out of it. I guess, what was the top one for you?
I think you could just feel the urgency going into that fourth quarter and in the final minutes, and it was a ton of fun in the sense that, you know, Jamal Crawford and Jimmy Butler really kind of put the teams on their back. They were hitting shot after shot, and it was just fun to kind of watch these two teams trade punches. I think there was a stretch maybe midway through the fourth where they just traded possessions, and each team was scoring every trip down, and that was a ton of fun to get to see that. And then Minnesota got stops down the stretch. I think maybe 4 straight turnovers for Portland at one point late in the game. So great execution for Minnesota. Jimmy Butler, I loved hearing from him in the post game that, you know, there were some things that he would deem pleasing defensively, stuff that they can build on. And then he kind of joked that he's sure Tibbs will still find stuff they can build on. But I think just a good win that, like you said, a great way to kind of close out this homestand that was filled with highs and lows, and hopefully something that can be a springboard.
Really stood out to me was the free throws in the fourth quarter. In the last two losses for Minnesota, Philly was 11 of 11 at the free throw line. That game on Saturday, Phoenix, their final 8 points came at the free throw line. Portland had just 5 free throw attempts the entire game, and Jimmy Butler able to give Minnesota the lead in back-to-back possessions by getting himself to the free throw line. I thought that was huge. And, you know, we talk all the time, or we hear Tibbs talk all the time about the difference in the fourth quarter. You've got to go harder. If you want to get a foul, you know, you've got to be tougher. Jimmy showed how tough you have to be to get to the free throw line in those couple of final couple of moments. And doing so after he was questionable going into the game with a bad back, he got hurt on Saturday. He came up huge. He was, you know, went through shoot around, went through the warm-ups. They said he was good to go, got in the starting lineup. And you'd think a guy with a bad back would just, you know, kind of make it through the game, not dominate the game. 37 points for Jimmy Butler. Here's what his teammate Jamal Crawford had to say about Jimmy, and then we'll hear from Jimmy as well.
I mean, what more can you say about the guy? He does it every single day. And I think that's what separates good players from the best players, you know, and the consistency to do it every single day. 2 days ago, the guy was laying right there on his back. Like, literally, he was laying there. You guys didn't know that, but I'm telling you now, I guess. So I guess it's breaking news. But the guy was laying there, and then 48 hours later, he puts us on his back, and he did an excellent job.
I mean, my guys, I ride for everybody in this locker room. I'm going to battle with them as long as I can and walk. And at the end of the day, I love this game. At the end of the day, I always think, like, man, you know, a kid from Tomball a long time ago, you know, if you had to tell him, you know, your back will hurt, but you still get to play in the NBA game, he's jumping up at that opportunity every single time.
All right, and after the game, too, we didn't play this bite, but Coach Tibbs was just, like, marveling at Jimmy Butler. He said, you know, over the last 15 games, this is who Jimmy Butler is. And we've talked about it a couple different times. Coming to this team, he integrated himself slowly. He was a playmaker early on. He was filling all the gaps. He was a utility man. Then started looking for his shot a little bit more. Now there's great balance in the ability to score, set up his teammates, rebound, the steals, the blocks, and at the same time take over a game in the fourth quarter. We're seeing that balance. And, you know, Tibbs, you could almost see him just shaking his head going, special player, special player. And I think that sums up who Jimmy Butler is.
And I have to think that attitude is contagious that Jimmy has, where he was asked about his injury and just basically saying, if I can walk, if I can go, I'm doing it for my guys. I'm doing it for my teammates and my team. And everyone else has to probably pick up what he's putting down in terms of, yeah, that's how we can all kind of put this thing together here. So you love to hear that, and you love to hear his teammates so appreciative, because it was a special performance. And like you said, I can't think he was at 100%, but he made it look pretty easy at times last night, and that's why he's a special player.
It was so fun to see not only him, but Jamal Crawford come up with 16 of his 23 in that fourth quarter. And I talked to Crawford on the postgame show, and I thought he said something that really resonated. And it goes back to something that Allen brought up during the broadcast as well, that, you know, there was a moment there at the end of the third quarter and even early into the fourth quarter where the Wolves just seemed sort of rudderless. You know, they couldn't quite get anything going. They couldn't get the stops. There wasn't a lot of energy. And what Crawford told me after the game was, I felt like the team needed a shot of passion. And I tried to come out there and bring that passion. And I think when you talk about, you know, a super sub and a sixth man of the year, that's what they've got to bring, the ability to change the pace of the game. And Crawford brought that with his energy. I mean, 23 points, he was hitting crazy shots, he was flying around on the offensive end, and that really seemed to just get the ball rolling just enough to get Minnesota back into it. He hit that three, you know, that obviously pulled Minnesota closer. They traded some baskets back and forth, but he had a three and an and one. And in both those plays, you know, you were able to gain a little bit of ground on the Pacer or on the Blazers, even though you're going back and forth scoring. And then it was just hand the ball to Jimmy and let him take over. So I thought it was a tremendous performance off the bench from Crawford, and I just love that, injecting a little passion and joy into the game.
And I think, you know, the guys who trumpet advanced stats will say, well, momentum doesn't really exist and you can't measure it, you can't value it. But if you were in that building, you could feel the momentum. And you talk about the guys you're going up against. Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum can suck the energy out of a building that they're in visiting really, really quickly, in terms of knocking down big shots, tough shots, just deflating shots that kind of have the fans collectively, oh, are you kidding me? And then Jamal Crawford can do the opposite of that. He can grab that momentum back for his team, and it made it a lot of fun. And yeah, Crawford's that instant offense, instant energy. He's done such a great job of kind of adjusting and finding that rhythm quickly when he comes off the bench, and he was huge last night.
And you talk about big clutch time players. Damian Lillard, third in the NBA in clutch time points. Jimmy Butler right behind him in fourth, 72 for Lillard and 68 for Jimmy. And then C.J. McCollum hanging right around there with 48 clutch time points. Want to bring up Andrew Wiggins. Struggled with the shot again last night, just 4 of 14 shooting. Finished up with 9 points. Did have 6 rebounds. He was a minus 3. But, you know, I don't think those numbers necessarily tell the story. The 6 rebounds was great to see. You know, he's not scoring the basketball, but as Tibbs always says, you've got to impact the game in other ways. 6 rebounds shows that, and then a steal, and that steal was huge in the fourth quarter. Stripping Aminu, it led to a breakout for Minnesota, you know, part of that 8-0 run. And so, well, you look at Wiggins' stats and kind of say, hey, he had a bad game. He did impact the game, and that steal was huge.
Well, and maybe that's something that can kind of spark him too, and just maybe, you know, we've heard these players, Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, even Coach Thibodeau, that you let your defense kind of spark your offense, and maybe that helps get the confidence back turned around, because you're right, it's tough to kind of find yourself in a multi-game sort of shooting lull, and that can be tough for pros to work through even, and maybe that's just something, you know, he made, that was a big play. You never know, that's an easy dunk more than likely for Chief, and you wonder how the game could have been different. So a big play from Wigg, and hopefully he gets it back on track.
So Minnesota takes that one over the Portland Trailblazers, 108-107. They're now a game and a half up on the Blazers and the Nuggets in the Northwest Division and for that fourth spot in the Western Conference. And there was, you know, it was interesting listening to Damian Lillard after the game talking about how physical that game was and how they weren't getting the calls. And you look at the free throw discrepancy. I mean, 21 free throw attempts for Minnesota, just 5 for Portland. The Wolves have always this season been very good about defending without fouling and having that positive free throw margin. But Minnesota was able to hit 17 of 21, and the Blazers just 5 of 5. And, you know, as you talk about these two teams, they've had some battles over the years. And you just wonder if this is sort of developing into one of those, I don't want to say rivalry, because obviously immediately someone's going to say, well, you got to have postseason games for it to be a rivalry. So maybe a regular season rivalry, if you will. But you got to imagine that when we see the Blazers again, Lillard's going to remember the fact that they only got 5 free throw attempts, and he's going to go extra hard to try and get those calls. And so this could set up to be a very fun series over the course of this season with 3 more matchups to come.
Well, we've heard it from Coach, too. Not only defend without fouling, but don't even appear to foul, because that was it loomed large in that Saturday loss to the Suns. So Lillard, he was upset. He was a guy who pointed out that he himself only had 1 free throw, and it was a technical free throw. And he did, you know, you tip your cap to him, and he, because he did say, hey, if we're taking care of the basketball a little bit better, maybe it doesn't come down to that. And he did still get a look at what would have been a game-winning shot anyways. But, yeah, he was not a happy guy after the game. And I think you're right. I think these are teams with – you look at some of the shot makers on either side, both are very fiery, competitive rosters, well-coached. I don't see why there couldn't be more, at least a building of healthy animosity, we'll say.
There you go. And even looking back to last season, there were a couple of good matchups down the stretch where Portland needed some wins to catapult themselves into the playoffs, and the Wolves needed some wins against the Blazers to continue to hang around in that playoff conversation. So there were some fun games last year, and I think already this season series off to a good start here this year. Minnesota victorious last night, 108-107, back in action tomorrow against another divisional opponent in the Denver Nuggets, a team that we'll see twice in the next 7 days. Keep it right here. We'll go 3 in the key, our top 3 storylines this week in the NBA. But coming up next, a conversation with Jimmy Butler. This is Wolvescast Audio on Demand on the Timberwolves Radio Network.
Wolves fans, give the gift of the Wolves this season with a Timberwolves Holiday Pack. Enjoy 5 great games against the Lakers, Cavs, Raptors, Rockets, and Bulls. Plus, get a free Timberwolves hat from New Era. There's no better gift to give yourself or someone on your gift list. Visit Timberwolves.com/holiday to purchase your pack today. Minnesota Timberwolves, All eyes north.
Welcome back to WolvesCast Audio On Demand. Still to come, Cal Soderquist will rejoin me. We'll go three in the key, take a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA. But coming off his 37-point performance in the Wolves' win over the Blazers on Monday, thought it was time to check in with Jimmy Butler.
I'm putting together a scouting report on Jimmy Butler. What's in that scouting report?
What's in it? Plays hard every play, almost every play. Great at getting to the basket. Can probably get you a bucket. Not the best shooter, but he can shoot. Are you showing this to other teams? Because I feel like if you show it to other teams, then no, I'm not. I'm done. I'm not telling you anything else. No more.
How about the label two-way player? How much pride do you take in that? We've heard you described as one of the best two-way players.
A lot, because there are so many guys in this league that can score 50, 60, 70, however many points. Now, if you can stop those guys from getting 40 to 20, you give your team a chance to win. And then, you know, I came in as a defensive player and slowly but surely added the offensive side to it. But it's a process. Everybody has a different way of getting to where they are in the league, and that was mine.
When you come in as a defensive player, how difficult is it to develop your offensive game?
It's not hard, because I think everybody in the offseason always works on their offensive game. You know, defense is the will to want to do it. If you play hard, you give that effort. And if you want to play defense, then you will. If you don't, then you won't. But offense is something that you can, you know, you kind of always work on. You can go in there and shoot 1,000 shots or dribble the ball X amount of times, shoot some free throws, work on your passing. Defense is more of a, look, you just got to want to do it.
I remember a couple years ago, there was a story about you that you rented an apartment in Chicago, didn't have TV.
In Houston. Yeah, we didn't have any of that. No internet. No cable. It's like, bored, get up and take your ass to the gym. Like, that's what we prided ourselves on. We do it somewhat now, but I definitely have cable and iTunes and all of that stuff. We don't really watch it. We'll play dominoes and cards and make fun of one another before we turn on the TV, though.
Is that how you spend your time?
Yeah.
Away from the court?
I love it, yeah. That, I go to some country music shows. Football, if you haven't noticed, I always keep my football with me. And in working out with other people who are great at what they do, whether it's a swimmer, a track and field individual, a football player. Maybe next year we'll throw soccer in there. So if Neymar wants to show me how to score some penalty kicks, I'm all for it.
What do you hope to learn from those other sports?
As much as it is learning, I think it's more humbling. Like, it's like, yo, Jimmy, stay in your lane. All right, you're not a football player. Shut up. You can't run faster than a track player. You can't swim faster than a swimmer. Like, it's a great workout, but it just shows you, like, their body is made differently than yours. So as much as you think, you know, just because you're a prime time and you're a great athlete, stay in your lane. And I love it. It's, like, so humbling when I'm like, wow, this is really hard. Like, you can do this and I can't. I'm not going to say that I can't. I'm not going to give up, but it's a very humbling experience. That's why I like to do it. And I talk a lot of trash about it, but that's the main reason why.
Is there a mental side of it that you can learn from these other great athletes that are great in their sports?
Just because you can't, you're not as good at it as somebody else doesn't mean that you can give up. You're not allowed to give up. And then you look at how everybody else goes about their day and how they go to be great in their craft. That's what I respect about everybody. Musicians, actors, everybody's working relentlessly to be at the top. So if you can do it in your craft and you can attempt to see what somebody else goes through in their craft, it's the most amazing thing in the world to me. It really is.
Country music show's coming up. You have a chance to go up on stage and sing with the band. Who are you going to see?
Oh,
and what song are you singing?
All right. If I had to pick one, I'm going with Luke Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to get up there and sing, or Florida Georgia Line. Really good friends of mine, both of them. If it's a female, I'll sing with Carrie Underwood. She's like really, really short. But, you know, I think a duet, I can sing too now, don't get me wrong. But I would break out a few notes, but it's kind of like, I put myself in a category where, like, Beyonce and Rihanna, they don't really sing for free either. Like, they go on tour, so I'm not just going to sit here and drop a couple bars for you.
What song? What song would you sing?
I wrote a couple songs, you know, play a couple instruments, but let's not get into it. I'm tired of talking about myself right now.
Second go-round with Coach Tibbs. If you could describe him in one word, what would it be?
I don't even know what overzealous means. But I'm gonna just use that word just because it has over in it, and he overdoes so many different things. But you love him for that, man. He wants to win. He wants to be great. And you'll never knock him for the way that he goes about things. So hopefully we're here, and I get to help this organization turn some things around and win a lot of basketball games.
How has Coach Tibbs helped mold your game?
Throwing everything at you, making it the most difficult for you, making you run through walls that you knew were there, and it was like, yo, there's no way. And he's out there fighting with you, though. Like, that's what you want. A coach you know is in those trenches with you. Like, yo, you play somebody 48 minutes, and then you're like, yo, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this. Turn around and play another 48 if need be. He's in your head like, yo, you got this, you can do it. But it's only because you do it every single day. You're gonna be tired in practice. I guarantee everybody's gonna be tired in practice. The game's the easy part. The practice is the difficult one. So if you can do it in practice, you can for sure do it in the game. He's the one that lets you know that.
What would it mean for you and this group to be able to break that streak for the Wolves and get them back to the postseason?
That's why everybody plays this game, to win, to win a championship. But in order to win a championship, you gotta be in the playoffs. So, you know, we take it a day at a time, starting right now, and then when we get to training camp tomorrow. But we want to win. I don't think anybody plays this game for any other reason than to be a winner. Like, the competitive nature of it. That is why we play, and that is what we're going to do here. We want to win. We want to put this city back on track and get it really, really exciting.
All right, great stuff from Jimmy Butler right there. He's been a big reason why Minnesota currently sitting fourth in the Western Conference. And over his last 10 games, he's really taken off, averaging 25 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. Keep it right here. Cal Soderquist is back. Cal Soderquist is back next. We go 3 in the key, talking Kobe, the streaking Rockets, and more on Wolvescast Audio On Demand.
The alley-oop from Teague to Towns. The Timberwolves have taken a 10-point lead.
Wolves fans, secure your seats for the December 27th home game because we've got the Denver Nuggets in the house. Join us and catch 4 quarters of nonstop action from Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Jimmy Butler, and the rest of the Wolves as we look to protect home court and take down the Nuggets. This is one game you won't want to miss, so visit Timberwolves.com to get your tickets now. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north.
Welcome back, Wolvescast Audio On Demand. John Folkey, Cal Soderquist. Time to go 3 in the key, our top 3 storylines this week in the NBA. And we'll start with a big night last night at Staples Center. Kobe Bryant getting not one, but 2 numbers retired to the rafters at Staples Center, number 8 and number 24. Number 1, to continue with that line of questioning, Kobe, the first player in NBA history to have 2 numbers retired into the same building. But what was amazing is they broke down his career in number 8 and his career in number 24. The points scored in both those numbers were nearly identical. 3 championships in number 8, 2 in number 24. It was really weird, the symmetry between his career wearing number 8 and his career wearing number 24. Before we talk about Kobe, let's hear from him last night during that jersey honoring at Staples Center.
Thank you. I want to say, you know, it's thank you so much for tonight. But you know, it's not about my jerseys that are hanging up there for me. You know, it's about the jerseys that were hanging up there before. You know, without them, I couldn't be here today. They inspired me to play the game at a high level. Magic, Cap, Shaq pushing me every day, Baylor, Chamberlain, Goodrich, West, Worthy, it goes on and on. And secondly, it's about this class organization. And Jerry Buss, your father, believing in a skinny old kid from Lower Marion High School in Philadelphia. And it's also about the next generation. It's about this current Laker roster that we have here. You know, it's about embodying the spirit that exists in those jerseys up there and carrying this organization forward so that the next 20 years are better than the past 20 years. And that's what it's about.
So Kobe Bryant there, a nod to the past and a look to the future as well. Not only, you know, nodding back to the Jerry West, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the Magic Johnson numbers that are already hanging there at Staples Center, but also turning to this current crop of Lakers players who we'll see coming up on Monday and saying, hey, now it's up to you guys to carry the torch. And before we talk about the Lakers, your memories of Kobe, and I know growing up you were a big Kobe guy.
I loved Kobe, and it became more of a crush or just a very deep admiration when we got to have him come here to the Target Center, I think in his last season or one of his last seasons, and he spent like 20 minutes in the postgame talking about embracing that kind of villain mindset. And it would be fun to kind of go back and sit the seasons down or even the games down and look and see if maybe that 24 was a little bit of a shift to more of that villain, because the Lakers were probably everyone, you know, if you weren't a Laker fan, they were probably your most hated team for a lot of fans who liked other teams. So Kobe really just embraced that whole role, and he kind of paved the way for other guys to feel like it was okay to be, you know, the most hated player for a lot of NBA fans. So he was an incredible scorer. So many, you know, one of the best, highest compliments for him, I think, is how many players have tried to model or at least take pieces of his game and put it into theirs, including some guys on this Wolves team. So I'll always be a Kobe fan, and the Lakers are going to run out of numbers, though, like Kobe mentioned. I mean,
they're going to have a lot of Taj Gibson.
1 through 99, I think, we're going to have to use every one at some point.
As far as Kobe goes, you know, and you brought up some players who emulate him. Andrew Wiggins is one of those. I've talked to Wig about that before, that he spends a lot of time in the offseason watching Kobe film and seeing where Kobe's spots on the floor were to be successful, and trying to see if those are spots where Andrew can be successful, and, you know, what type of footwork, what type of shot selection he got that might work and complement Andrew's game as well. But I think it's fascinating to see the career arc of Kobe. And you're right about how he went from trying to be beloved by everyone to embracing, you know, being that villain, being the hated player, the one who came in and just ripped your heart out.
And fueled him.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think as he got older, what really stands out to me is how introspective he got. Mm-hmm. And, you know, early on he was so guarded. Everything he said was, you know, it was a cliche. It sounded like he was reading from a book. And then as he got older, suddenly there's casual swearing, which number 8 Kobe would never do that. You know, he was trying to endorse things or whatever, trying to build this public image. But old man Kobe was just, he sort of opened himself up and said, look, this is who I am. I'm incredibly competitive. I'm going to hold everybody to a higher standard. And I'm going to, you know, not allow anyone to slack off. And if you're not with me, then you're against me. And it was just interesting to see him sort of embrace who he is. And then in his latter years, really start to look back and appreciate, you know, what the game did for him. And, you know, what I think is interesting about Kobe, and we have this conversation every once in a while, especially at times like this, as he gets his number retired, is, you know, where does Kobe rank among the best players ever to play the game? And I think it's so challenging because the eras are so different. You know, there's the George Mikan era, there's the, you know, the short shorts era, there's the Magic Bird and Michael Jordan era, and then there's sort of this Kobe era. And the Kobe era, you know, it bridged the gap between the Jordan era and to LeBron, what we have now, you know, the LeBron and the space and pace era. And at that time, the game was so focused on isolation. You know, it was one pick and roll, everybody else get out of the way and go. And you look at the scoring averages during that time, and they're mind-boggling. I mean, multiple guys averaging over 30 points a game. This was the era of Tracy McGrady, of Allen Iverson, of Kobe. There were some great players that came through in this era, but it was such a different game. It was so predicated upon having a wing player, giving him the ball, and making him making him make a tough shot. And Kobe was one of the best at hitting tough shots like that. And so, you know, as the game began to change and go away from that isolation, it was interesting how Kobe's game, you know, you still appreciated it, but it wasn't nearly as successful as some of these teams that were flying around, multiple ball handlers, you know, big stepping out and players cutting all the time. His game just didn't quite translate into that era. Now, you know, had Kobe come in this era, I think he would have found a way to be successful, but at that stage of his career, you know, he was much more about, hey, this is who I am, this is how I play the game. But kind of interesting to think of, you know, the different eras of basketball. And I think for his era, Kobe, there's no doubt Kobe was the best player in that era. But his game was so different from what we're seeing guys do now.
It's cool to be able to look at those highlights and pull up some old games, because you're right, it's almost night and day to see kind of the pace and the way offense is operated. But he mastered it, and you always wonder, if you had dropped guys like that and into different eras, would they be able to do the same thing? And I wouldn't be someone to bet against Kobe, because he wasn't just a scorer. He was a maniacal defender. Like mm-hmm. you said, he brought out the best in his teammates, and he was a winner. I think he would want us to say that first over everything else. But, man, it was a ton of fun to watch him score. And our guy Johnny Krasinski at The Athletic had the great sort of recap with the help of Sam Mitchell on that 81-point night. Just incredible to still think about someone being able to do that in one game.
Yeah, that is a great read. The Athletic, it went up yesterday, theathletic.com, John Krasinski with Sam Mitchell as Kobe scored 81 against Mitchell's Toronto Raptors. And even if you don't feel like reading the entire article, go there, check it out, because you can watch the highlights. They're embedded in there as well. And it's just fascinating to take a look back at that. All right, topic number two here as we go three in the key, and we'll speed through these next couple. Chris Paul has started his Rockets career 15-0. He's the first player to do that since they started tracking starters in the box score back in the 70-71 season. So as a starter, Chris Paul 15-0 with the Houston Rockets. They have now won 14 straight games. Their franchise record for consecutive wins is 22. That was set back during the Rick Adelman era, when they, remember, they had all those injuries, like Tracy McGrady was out, Yao Ming was out, Chuck Hayes at 6'4" was your starting center, and somehow Adelman was able to get that team to rattle off this massive winning streak. But they've won 14 straight. They look unstoppable. But how crazy that Chris Paul has not lost since leaving the LA Clippers.
This is just the one thing that we thought would maybe serve as kind of a speed bump for them, is that getting him acclimated, you know, playing with James Harden, working his way into this offense. You talk about guys who maybe have to adapt to different styles. I mean, Chris Paul may have had a little bit of a tougher time, we thought, trying to play in this Houston system. But it's scary to think that if these are the first 15, 20 games and this is how they look, what are they going to look like in March and April?
So we wonder then, as we move to topic number three, can they keep it going? The Christmas Day games are coming up, and we've got another great slate of games. It starts early with the Sixers and the Knicks. Then we've got the finals rematch, the Cavs and Warriors, followed by Wizards Celtics. Who's going to be dressing in black for that game, we wonder? The Rockets and Thunder, and then it'll close out with the Wolves and Lakers. So can Houston keep it going all the way to Christmas Day?
That would be fun, because I was the guy who originally wanted Cleveland to keep things rolling until Christmas Day.
Right.
But if Houston,
the thing is, Cleveland still won like 17 of their last 18 games, and so they could be riding a pretty healthy streak into that game.
You know, the thing I'll say, whether or not Houston can keep this streak going, when you look at this full schedule of games on Christmas Day, even in years past, there have been maybe one clunker where you're like, oh, man, you know, those Knicks teams that had Carmelo and not much else, as much respect as I have for him. But for all five of these, everyone just, I mean, even the Knicks Sixers, obviously, if Kristaps Porzingis is healthy, and the Sixers, we just saw them here. And you mentioned the animosity between the Wizards and the Celtics. That's like two family members having to see each other at Christmas when you don't want to talk to them at all. So I'm very excited for all of this. And then we get to cap it off with a Wolves win, hopefully.
You know, and I think it'll be interesting to see how Minnesota faces off against L.A. I'm curious to see this Lakers team up close and personal. You've got Lonzo Ball and his cord vision. Corey Brewer, you know, playing for the L.A. Lakers. So there's some Minnesota ties there. But we'll see the Lakers twice in a week. And how funny that you see him on Christmas Day, you see him on New Year's Day. So we're just ringing in every holiday with the Lakers. I haven't looked ahead to Flag Day, but we're probably out at Staples Center for that one. I'll just throw this out here as we wrap things up. 70 straight years the NBA has played on Christmas.
Wow.
Right? I was just looking that up, and there have been some great records. There have been some great games, some great scoring performances. But you think about how ingrained sort of in mainstream culture the NBA and Christmas Day are. 70 straight years that the NBA has celebrated, you know, the kind of their unofficial start to the season for the casual fan with a slate of games on Christmas. And this is the, I believe, second year that they're going to have five games scheduled all the way across. So wall-to-wall basketball on Christmas Day. We'll cap it all off with the Wolves and Lakers. Don't forget, 9:30 tip time for that one. Our pregame show will get underway at 9 o'clock on our radio flagship, 830 WCCO and the Timberwolves Radio Network. Minnesota back at it tomorrow. They are in Denver kicking off a three-game trip against the Nuggets. Catch that game all across the Wolves Radio Network as well. That'll do it for this episode of Wolvescast Audio on Demand. Be sure to follow along on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, and, of course, Timberwolves.com. Don't forget, tune in as well. You can get that audio on demand through your Alexa, through Amazon. So plenty of great ways to follow along with Wolvescast. We're going to take next week off for the holidays, back at it in 2018. For Cal Soderquist, I'm John Fokey. We'll talk to you then. Have a safe and happy holiday from all of us at the Timberwolves Radio Network.